Kia ora koutou, you're listening to Dateline from RNZ Pacific. Ko Jamie Tahana aho, e haere ake nei. A scathing report into the New Zealand government's handling of last year's measles outbreak in South Auckland. Pacific health workers say it just details what they've been complaining about for years.
It's not just one organisation that failed. I think it was almost like a domino effect.
Ahead of New Zealand's election, Pacific climate warriors turned to rallying turnout.
Hey, Pacific communities in Aotearoa said that these are the most important things to them.
And COVID makes for muted PNG independence celebrations. A failed vaccination program, a lack of experience, inadequate communication, a confused response, and a lack of immediate action are just some of the findings contained in a scathing review into last year's measles outbreak in Auckland. The outbreak ripped through South Auckland, infecting as many as 2,000 people, 750 of whom were hospitalised. It's also likely to have spread from here to Samoa, where it proved deadly. The Pacific community in Auckland was hit the hardest. Pacifica were infected at 14 times the rate of Pākehā. The review, released yesterday by New Zealand's Ministry of Health, says the outbreak was largely preventable and came about because no real action was taken to fix a large vaccination gap. When an outbreak came, health authorities were slow to distribute vaccines or contact trace, and years of restructures at agencies meant there was no one capable of leading a response. South Auckland GP and chair of the Pacifica GPs network, Api Talimaitonga, says the report laid out what Pacifica health workers had been warning about for years.
It's a preventable, it still is a preventable illness, and I feel sad that the collective we as a community, general practitioners, public health, did not do enough to identify when this was happening and stop the tragic, the outbreak. Hindsight is fantastic, but we could have been
hindsight
a bit
is
more
fantastic,
proactive.
But you were saying, we spoke in, I think it was August last year, you were saying it's happening and not enough is happening. Were you listened to?
So there was, in my view, a failure at a lot of levels. So, I, as a GP in South Auckland, was beginning to see a case now and again. And then I talked to some of my colleagues who are Pacific GPs in the community as well, who were seeing cases, but none of us had that overview of the numbers and the illnesses that were spreading. And so I feel that if we had had stronger leadership from the beginning, and so we had to fill in notification forms that went to regional public health, who would have been seeing all these notifications from GPs, from hospitals, but the reaction was really slow to tell us, hey, there is an outbreak. It's not just you seeing one or two now and again. It's actually happening. And putting in place measures that would have prevented it spreading further, would have got the immunizations ramped up much faster, and just level of communication and assurance in the community about this.
And each of those points were highlighted, right? The leadership, Auckland Regional Public Health, the three district health boards and the Ministry of Health all in some sense had no idea what each other were doing until quite late in the piece. Is this an experience you felt was borne out?
Yes. It's not just one organisation that failed. I think it was almost like a domino effect. And even I still remember when the vaccines were ordered, there was not enough of a communication to go out in the appropriate languages, facilitated by the appropriate Pacific providers who, work and live in the community. These are mature providers who know the communities they serve. And what we found in COVID is when we used the providers, our testing numbers hit the roof. People came along. They could be reassured. They trusted this voice. And, you know, I feel bad that I'm saying it now, that I wish it had happened back with measles as well.
I mean, yeah, possibly a good example of a lesson learned, but again, this review does say that these community organisations that you speak of, which you're a part of, we've got so many, the likes of the Whanau and all them, were yep. sidelined, and that the capability to put the messages out in appropriate languages weren't there. But I guess the most glaring thing is this is something you have been saying, the community has been saying for a very long time, and it just so starkly displays the inequities in the health system. So what faith do you have that it's being listened to now?
Yeah, and that's the real disappointment, Jamie, that it's not just my voice. It's the Pacific health sector knowledge and combined intelligence and voices for the last 20 years. And it just falls on deaf ears. We seem to be reactive. You know, we did it with the meningococcal B in the early 2000s, with HPV in 2009. And obviously, the rates of immunizations, the communities responded when we use the local Pacific leadership and infrastructure like church ministers who are well respected in the community. This was completely absent during the measles outbreak.
There's a whole range of recommendations in the report. From your observations and experiences, does it look like these will be implemented, you know, this time round?
I'm an optimist and I hope they will be really taken seriously. This is, you know, witness the boat big time on this for our vulnerable communities. But we've learned from COVID and now there is a kind of shift in the dialogue. People are talking about the inequities much more, the vulnerable communities. We were listened to in COVID, where we were funded as a Pacific sector to stand up our clinicians to do the messaging in the languages out into their communities, to use the church ministers to have a say in where the testing centres and mobile clinics could be placed. So being an optimist, I think it's changing, but we can't take our foot off the pedal. We need to continue to press forward with this message and be listened to by the agencies. We've really pushed ahead with the immunization campaign, and I think I'm a bit worried that nationally the numbers don't look like they're improving or even decreasing in some cases. So we can't, you know, sit on our laurels here. We need to continue to push the vaccination message.
Right, so work still needed with the vaccine drive. Rates
definitely, definitely. And you know, I hear from some providers during the COVID response, they were funded to do the COVID swab, you know, for this. But, you know, as Pacific and Maori providers do, they go well beyond the call of duty or what the contract says. So with the same person, they checked for sore throat, swabbed them in case it was streptococcus, did the rheumatic fever, checked their blood pressure as well as their blood sugar. So, you know, this is why I push for our providers who know the community to be used. They are there, just ready, and they're well known. And it kind of defies logic that we don't use them more often than we do.
The report does not really touch on how this Auckland and Christchurch outbreak contributed to the epidemic in Samoa. Should it have addressed that? Because, you know, the link is so clear.
The link is so clear. I don't know whether it was the terms of reference of the report that limited that. But, you know, it's within the Pacific community. It is well known that we in New Zealand did export the measles to Samoa. And thereby is another tragedy that could have been avoided.
That's South Auckland GP and the chair of the Pacifica GPs Network, Api Talimaitonga. The Ministry of Health says it's learned lessons from the review and is working to implement the recommendations. Pacific climate warriors have turned into champions of electoral voting to encourage more Pacifica to get to the polls this election. They're running campaigns out of Auckland and Wellington called Pacific Votes Count. It's about informing Pacific communities about enrolment, how to vote, and the importance of voting. In 2017, turnout was low in areas with large Pacific communities, a good example being South Auckland. Sarah Jane Hopgood reports.
I think so, yes.
Yeah, you're unsure?
Unsure.
Why is that?
I don't actually know who I want to vote for. I think the only person I know is Saul William Seal, and that's about it.
This is a young Pacific voter in Mangere still making up her mind about whether or not to vote. Turnout has traditionally been low in South Auckland, the home of large Pacific populations. Mandy Bote from the Electoral Commission says the only ethnicity data they collect is for Māori.
When we look at populations, in particular electorate, where there are larger Pacific communities, that the enrolment rate tends to be quite high, so, you know, kind of over 90% really, but the turnout rate tends to be much lower.
Pacific Climate Warriors Wellington's coordinator, Mary Moe Onokolio, explains competing priorities are a main barrier.
We're more important about ensuring that we have food on the table, that our kids have shoes on their feet when they go to school and full stomach and they have what they need when they're there, or even things like that we can afford to get to school.
In Auckland, Brianna Fruin explains the Warriors have switched from climate to voting in the face of the major challenges facing the community.
Hard to get out to the climate strike if maybe the night before you didn't even have a warm house to live in. And so this was really something that inspired us to start Pacific Votes Count.
Pacific Climate Warriors have gone online with topics such as parties' policies, MP profiles, as well as Zoom discussions for first-time voters with guests such as senior health expert Dr. Colin Tukiutonga. Last month, they also conducted an online survey to gauge the most important issues for Pacific people. Ms. Moe Onokolio says warm and affordable housing, quality health care, and fair wages were the top priorities.
We want to use those results from the survey to inform our own outreach and our own work, but also go back to the people who are standing for election and say, hey, Pacific communities in Aotearoa said that these are the most important things to them.
The Electoral Commission has been working with Pacifica communities since 2017 to make voting more accessible. Ms. Bote says feedback includes not feeling confident in the voting process on the day and about whether their vote will actually make a difference.
We are recruiting people from the community who understand their community, talking to church groups around really demystifying the electoral process to ensure that people do know that it is easy.
Despite the low turnout rates in the past, this week in Mangere there was a good response of Pacific people confident on who they were going to vote for.
Yeah, Labour. They're for the people, eh?
I vote for the Labour. Very good party for Pacific people.
I like Ganesha. It's good to support Ganesha Party.
I vote for the Prime Minister.
That's our reporter, Sarah Jane Hopgood. As Papua New Guinea marked its 45th anniversary of gaining independence yesterday, the Prime Minister has taken stock of a difficult year for the country. James Madape spoke about the significant impacts that COVID-19 has had on PNG. Over 500 cases confirmed in the past 2 months have found the health system under massive strain, while the pandemic has caused PNG's already ailing economy to contract significantly, with Marape's coalition government taking on a mounting debt to address big drops in revenue. Speaking at a flag-raising ceremony in Port Moresby, the Prime Minister appealed to citizens to work together towards creating a better PNG, where the country attains greater prosperity that is fairly shared.
All of us must commit to building Papua New Guinea that the future generation will be proud of. That is why, as Prime Minister, I have commenced the work of restoring good governance, and our institution to fight corruption will be established in November, the ICAC. That is why we have already delivered something I committed last September, the Whistleblowers Act. We're working on proceeds of crime. That is why we are empowering our people, shifting the balance back to national interests rather than the interest of minority few.
Marape said his government has been pushing to ensure PNG and its people get a better and fairer share of benefits from major resource projects.
This includes our efforts in our investments going today in agriculture, in our micro small, medium enterprises, so that our people too can participate in helping growing the economy. This includes our effort to upscale our focus on downstream processing of our natural resources. This is the reason why I continue to retire commitments and debts of past government that has gone to the sky, and we are systematically cleaning up and reducing them whilst working to satisfy present-day needs.
James Marape also said his government was committed to bringing lasting peace and a political settlement in Bougainville, where the population voted overwhelmingly for independence in last year's referendum. And that is Dateline from RNZ Pacific. If you want to find out more about the community and the region, go to our website, rnzi.com. But for now, I'm Jamie Tahana. Thanks for joining us. Tō whā.